You're tuned in to the American Journal with Rex Jones and Tim Tompkins. Watch it live right now at band.video.
We love the deep dive. We're coming back to you, second hour of the American Journal. I want to let you know right now, breaking news, they are hitting the hell out of Hezbollah in Lebanon and the civilian populations as well. There's some crazy footage coming out of that that we're also going to cover later on in the hour. Tim Tompkins with the incredible deep dive. Really appreciate you breaking it down, Tim. What do we have going on in Africa?
Okay. You know, this is my favorite part of the show, the deep dive. This is where I get to get into the specifics. We've been covering a lot about things that have happened here in America. I wanted to open this up to the wider world.
Right.
And there's a lot of underreported stories. There's a lot of things that are happening around the world that people don't know what's going on. And one of those places is the Democratic Republic of the Congo.
Right.
And that has been a region that has been plagued with war after war after war. I think they've been in conflicts for almost like 30 plus years.
Right. And this is one of the things Trump said he fixed.
Yeah.
That we're going to get into.
So if you guys have ever heard him say, I solved seven wars. This is one of the wars that he's referring to. I'm not sure what the other six were, but this one was definitely one of the seven that he was referring to. And so we got to start here. So, you know, Rwanda and the Democratic Republic of the Congo have been locked into a conflict that's tied to rebels and control of the Eastern Congo for decades. And so Trump has hosted both leaders and pushed this deal through. And you can see that on the screen. This is him signing like some temporary peace deal, but it's not that simple. But like, here's a quick breakdown. So Rwanda is supposed to pull its troops out of the Congo. Congo is supposed to crack down on anti-Rwandan rebel groups. Both sides stop backing the militias. And then the U.S. is supposed to oversee the pressure and keep both sides sticking to it. And that's just the surface version, but there's more things. And the real story is not just about this handshake that's happening in Washington, but why the conflict, it never ends, and why the U.S. has just suddenly decided we're going to come in here and just save everybody and stop this war, you know? And so why does the U.S. care? The U.S. cares because you got to understand why they're paying attention. There's four aspects to this, right? We've got critical minerals. So East Congo holds cobalt, copper, tin, tungsten, and tantalum, which are like, those are core materials for EVs. And they've got smartphones, AIs, military data, tech. All of those things are controlled with those types of ingredients. Then you have China that dominates these supply chains today. And so the U.S. is also trying to take a shot at breaking their dominance over those regions. Second thing is they want to contain the chaos. The region has been one of the deadliest conflict zones on the earth for decades. And so this kind of means less, refugees that are coming out of that. The third thing that we care about is it's another like diplomatic win. Like we were talking about, like the U.S. gets influence and leverage, but then also
Trump's trying to like pad his record.
Yeah,
basically.
Well, I mean, this was him.
And it's a good thing too. But
it is a good thing. But yeah, remember, cause he really wanted that Nobel Peace Prize.
I am the beast president.
Right?
Yes, exactly.
So this was one of the things that he was using to kind of to position himself for it. And then he just wants to keep Rwanda and Congo aligned with Washington because remember, where there are power vacuums, there's the ability for, quote unquote, the enemy, China and Russia, to step into those regions. And again, when you have such a rich country with such extensive resources, you don't want that to fall into the enemy hands. So let's talk about Rwanda. We'll actually show where it is on a map. Let's go ahead and pull that map up so people can see. So you can see it's kind of like in the center. It is massive.
It's huge.
Okay. It is a very big country. It actually is almost the size of Europe. If I've got that graphic up there for number two, we can show the comparison between the DRC and Europe. You're just going to see, look, it covers pretty much all of Europe, minus Spain and Portugal. But like it just puts it in perspective. And so the Congo didn't just start as a normal country. It actually started as the European powers in the late 1800s came in and started projecting their power under this Belgian king. And so the
King
entire
Leopold the second.
Huh? I don't
King Leopold II.
I don't remember the guy's name.
It has to be King Leopold. And this is a guy that I believe was known for. I think he killed like 2 million people. I think he was a guy. He was like, oh, I'll chop off your arm or your leg.
They did a lot.
Yeah.
In that region, and there's a lot of things that they don't cover as much in history. And so the system was just built for one purpose. They wanted to
monster.
Yeah.
Yeah, this guy's evil. Go ahead.
Belgium was rich because it went into Africa, and they went in, they pulled resources, they extracted the wealth, and they basically left nothing behind for the people. And let's go ahead and play this video that's going to show down how the Europeans went in, carved up parts of Africa, and just did resource extraction. Okay, let's go ahead and roll that.
This image that we've sort of doctored up to make it a little bit more immersive, this is European leaders inventing countries in Africa in the late 1800s, carving up this map, looking for resources. And the Congo was one of the many inventions of Europeans.
Congo was created actually as the private fiefdom of a Belgian king in 1885. And so the whole purpose of the Congolese state was always to extract from the local population. It was never to create a government or a state that provides public services or public goods, including security.
The Belgians mapped it and discovered just how many valuable resources the place had. The most valuable at the time was rubber, and it led to one of the most brutal colonial exploitation campaigns in history.
It's got an enormous amount of natural resources. Congo is geological scandal, is what Congolese call it. It's the largest producer of copper in Africa. It's the largest producer of cobalt. It's one of the largest producers of diamonds, tungsten, tantalum, tin. You go down the list, they have it. The uranium used for Hiroshima and Nagasaki came from the Congo. Like, a lot of Belgium's wealth came from Congolese mines.
Again, go watch part 3 of that series if you want a deeper dive. So the most important part of this section of the story is that Belgium didn't build a country out of Congo. They built a pipeline for resources to Europe. The roads and railways led from mines and plantations to ports, not between cities. It created ethnic groups and tribal identities and then played them off each other so that they could conquer them, but also, in the process, sowing the seeds for future conflict and division.
That deep history really is important, understanding where we are today, because a lot of the habits and the trends and the logics of the state sort of persist until today.
Some of the structural issues to Congo is still facing, moving from bad governance, destructured army, lack of a sustainable policy, that is actually where we can situate some of these trends.
Okay, so before I continue with this, I had a train of thought, and I want to bounce this off of you.
Sure.
So we just see this a lot with the European powers, what they did in the past, and you know, it just jogs my memory that they did this with a lot of countries, not just in Africa, but across the world. Right. And you had this play out in India. You had this play out in Southern America. And so they Middle East. They did this divide and conquer. And what you're seeing now, and this is just eye-opening, because as I've been researching and understand, a lot of the stuff that you're seeing where there's like these generational conflicts, arguments, people like going to war with each other, and the destabilization comes a lot from this time period.
Sure.
Right?
Well, and that's the thing. And we look at the project going on right now with Israel, with the colonial project there. It's literally, you can talk about what's happened in America maybe like 100 or 200 years ago. You have people here that have been trained to like recognize colonialism, especially on the left. And you look at what's going on over there. It's literally an imperial project.
Well, it was, right?
Yeah.
Because, and not to diverge from the deep dive here, but if you go to Israel and Palestine and all of that, that was something that happened when Britain was still kind of in its last dying era. It was still in that power position and where it promised the land to two people.
To speak, Navy, I think I understand the point that you were making earlier. To speak to what you're saying, we have an area where you have Jewish people, Arabs, whatever, just living in peace. And then suddenly it doesn't just become a place people live. It becomes the British mandate of Palestine.
Yes.
And you draw lines around
it.
And you cut it up and you make these decisions. And then that we see the ramifications centuries later from stuff like that all around the world. I mean, Africa, like the people living there, they didn't get a say. Yes. They didn't get a say in what the continent was going to be.
Yes, and you've probably heard of the Kurds, right?
Sure.
The Kurdish people, they've got like 40 million people.
The U.S. has faked them out numerous times.
Right. I mean, everybody's used them.
We're going to give you a state. Ooh.
But I did a whole article on this on the newsletter that we have, and it was the same thing playing out there too. Right. Britain and the colonialists went in, carved up these regions, and they didn't leave the state for the Kurdish people. They just said, right. Well, you know, Iran looks like this, Iraq looks like this, and then we'll keep Turkey like this. And then we'll – and so you just see like these powers are just dictating everything across the world. And we have conflict after conflict. People don't even remember the history to know why they're fighting in the beginning. Right. True. So you just see these things play out for hundreds of years, and the true people that had bad intentions never get punished, and it's always down the line. And so we have to get out of these cycles. And that's why, you know, you see Europe today, their economy's dying, Rex.
Yes.
They have no ability because they're no longer able to do the resource extraction that they were able to do before.
Right.
And so there's only but so many countries left that are willing to deal with this type of mentality, which is why you're seeing more people trying to compete for those last dying resources.
Well, the thing is, like, people are like, why would we just surrender to you and give you everything when the stuff that we have is the stuff that powers your entire civilization?
Right, right.
So that they actually want like a seat at the table.
Yes, they want a seat at the table. And so I mean pretty much when the Britain and all of these countries went in, the Belgians went in, they basically left a weak central authority, no real infrastructure, deep ethnic divisions. They created artificial races for them to compete against each other.
Right. Well, I mean, you think about the Houthis and the Tutsi. I'm messing up maybe the names of the tribes, but what happens is I think they put the Houthis in charge and they killed all the Tutsis.
Yep.
And that's like, oh, that's and now the area is depopulated and they control it. And it's all planned. It's all planned out. It's a system of control because the British people, the Dutch, they figured out, OK, we can send 1,000 people to a region. And if we figure out what languages the people speak, what they believe in, who hates each other, we can back both sides against each other and then come out on top when they're both dead.
Yep. It is sociopathic behavior. But sure. I mean, they figured it out. And so now you have, you know, Rwanda's genocide that's flooded with these armed groups. And so in 1994, you had Rwanda explode into this like genocide. And so armed militias and civilians start fleeing into eastern Congo. And right. So it's the exact same extremist groups that were responsible for the killing. And so those fighters, they regroup across Rwanda's borders. Rwanda sees it as like a direct unfinished threat. So Rwanda keeps intervening and invading inside of Congo to go after those people. And so the Congo pushes back. Then it spirals into the two groups where you got Rwanda and Congo fighting each other. And so you had the first Congo War, then you had the second Congo War, and this is called Africa's World War.
Okay.
They had their own world war. But here's the part like most people miss. Over time, Rwanda's involvement in the troops only stopped being about security, right? And then the Eastern Congo is packed with these valuable minerals and backed by rebel groups like M23, which gives Rwanda influence over that territory. So now Rwanda is involved for two reasons. It's not just that security, but it's also mineral access. And so this is a major reason why the eastern part of Congo never sees any type of like, you know, stability. And so let's pull up graphic number three, showing what that East Congo region looks like. It's going to shock you. It just looks like a bunch of mini countries. And you can zoom in on there just a little bit. You just see everything carved up. And it's just all of those blobs are different regions controlled by different militia groups. And you got
to
pay a different
tax if you're passing through. And we're going to get to that.
Yeah, we're going to get to that. But yeah, I mean, look, it's like during those wars, Congo's national army basically falls apart. There's no discipline. There's no structure. So the local villages start creating their own self-defense groups. And so then you see it's not just rebels, but the people are protecting their homes. And so eventually Congo's weak government arms those groups to start fighting the rebels back, backed by Rwanda. And so this becomes the turning point for the conflict. So once these militias get the weapons, the training, the experience, the taste of local power, they don't want to give it back.
Right.
And so then the weapons that are mostly like Soviet era guns, like AK-47s, PKMs, RPKs, RPGs, they're like cheap, they're durable, they're everywhere. And so Congo becomes flooded with the Cold War weapons that never go away.
Right.
So now the war ends on paper, but these groups are staying active and they stay alive because the state can't protect anybody.
Mm-hmm.
The economy's broken, and then fighting becomes the only way to survive. So the armed group become the local authorities by default. And so this is how
might makes right.
Yes.
Literally.
Might makes right.
Yeah.
Yes. And so now there's a power vacuum that you have to deal with in a militia ecosystem. And so, you know, it gets worse than that. These militias don't just fight. They actually start running a business.
Oh, okay.
And so, you know, when we look at this, this war starts to turn into like this business model. And, you know, we don't ever have to fathom something like that here in America.
Well, war is a racket, you know, and I think we do fathom it here in America. We're just kind of on the other side of the table. We're kind of the house.
You know? We're kind of the house. And, you know, the rest of the world is watching, but they're also kind of involved. And so this conflict stops being about taking the capital, but or winning the war. It becomes just extracting value from the territory itself.
Right.
And so you start to realize, like, wait, we kind of forgot the whole reason why we're fighting. And it's just generation after generation. So now, to your point, these militias started setting up roadblocks. They started to tax the farmers.
Got to pay the tax.
They started to take cuts from the mines. They started to control the villages. They started the forced recruitment. And so, you know, the Congo's own soldiers, the right. own government of Congo, they are now also doing the same thing. And so this underpaid government troops, they start to set up checkpoints. And it just becomes like this Lord of the Flies situation, you know? Like, and that's the part
there ain't no justice out there. All there is like a bunch of rape, bunch of murder, bunch of drugs, like a bunch of kids with AK-47s running around.
Well, and the reason why, like I watch these stories, I read these stories, and these are the moments that I start to, you know, appreciate that the fact that, you know, what America has built in terms of like legal systems and sure. government and police
that's
and
anarchy.
Military. Because, you know, if somebody does something wrong to you and steals, you at least have an ability to go after that person, or you like we're getting robbed, you know, silently through a paycheck, but it's not like somebody saying hand up half your belongings to me, or I'm going to shoot you in the face.
Exactly.
Right. 100%. So we got to remember not to take things for granted sometimes, because it could be worse.
Sure.
You know, you could have been born anywhere else, but you had the privilege of being born in the United States. And I don't say that lightly. I say that for myself as well.
We're very grateful, yes.
Super grateful. So let's go ahead and play this next video that's going to show the gold and how it leaves the mines and the traveling that it goes through. Because a lot of these security groups, like we were talking about, it's about the resource extraction, and it has its own pipeline. So let's go ahead and roll this clip.
You have millions of people digging for tin, tungsten, and mostly gold, actually.
This is a pit mine or artisanal mine.
This is thousands of young men digging in hillsides, sometimes in terrible conditions, in lots of different pits. They're dotting mostly very remote hillsides in the Eastern Congo.
They work in these harsh conditions, often with little more than shovels, pans, sometimes bare hands, pulling gold from the soil.
These are fairly militarized pits. You'll find soldiers. They'll provide quote-unquote protection and security in exchange for payments.
This is unrefined gold. So it's extracted, maybe it's powder or flakes or a small nugget, and then it starts its journey towards the city. But this journey will cross through the territory of dozens of different groups.
Roadblocks are one feature of the landscape of the Congo, and there are thousands of them.
Roadblocks are everything. So one of these armed groups has a roadblock, and they demand a cut from anyone transporting minerals. If you know the system well and you're well connected, you have relationships, that will help you with these transactions, ensure that they don't get violent.
You go into a little hut and you give them what is expected. There'll be some negotiating back and forth, but you pretty much know what you're going to have to settle for. They'll get some of that.
Now, again, I want to emphasize, this doesn't just happen for gold. You can be stopped for anything. You can be stopped for carrying cattle. You may have to pay just to move through the checkpoint. Again, everything that moves will be taxed.
There could be 50 or 60 of these roadblocks before you get to a major city.
A motorcycle could be taxed a few bucks to pass. If you're a big truck, maybe you're taxed $700 for a single checkpoint. And according to the people we talked to, a lot of these transactions happen without violence. It's the threat of violence that keeps the order going out here where there is no government. Wait a minute. But look, that is a soldier. That is an official Congolese military soldier, like from the government military.
What do you think about that?
Well, they know it's not a threat of violence. They know it's imminent violence if they don't immediately do what is required. Because like this is – it's a different world. Now, we sit over here. We're driving around our air-conditioned cars listening to, I don't know, Drake or whatever. And it's just these people – we need to be grateful for what we got, man.
Yes, seriously. We do. Yes, we do. And again, it's like, you know, a lot of these countries, and it's not just specific to Africa, a lot of these countries around the world, like I said, have been plagued by like the bigger power that
came in.
Often
the richest as well.
Yeah. And it's that resource extraction. Just imagine if every country that had its own resources just traded in the free market with what it had. Imagine what countries would actually be higher up.
Well,
and actually be superpowers compared to what's happening right now.
That's literally the entire thesis of BRICS. That's what BRICS represents, is nations trading based on their own national resources backed by their currency.
Right.
So
now the problem is, and I'm thinking about it critically here, and we're coming up on a break, but I'm thinking about
it. Next segment. We're good.
Yeah. What I'm thinking about is like they also need to have help in infrastructure to actually extract the resources properly and set up the systems that are necessary for them to have a thriving country. And so when you've put a country back so far for decades and decades and decades, it's like it requires an outside force to come in and help. Now, do you think, you know, America and these Western nations would be so privy to do something like that?
I think the reason why we have these major conflicts is to distract from these minor situations, because if these things weren't going on, then we'd actually, hey, like, what's going on here? How many people are dying in this area? But because you have these world-ending conflicts all the time that are about to happen, it just gets swept under the rug.
Yeah, I mean, like, think about how many times Syria got swept under the rug.
Right. Oh, we don't talk about that.
We don't talk about that, and the genocide that was happening there, and the
still going on.
And there's genocide that's happening in the cobalt mines in Africa.
Sure.
And people are like dying by the tens of thousands every single day. So it is shocking. And the whole reason why we do these deep dives is just to shed light on things that are not nearly covered as much as they should be covered.
Yes.
And so that you just learn something new each day, because that's the whole point of the show, is like, we want you to come out of this learning something new and be like, okay, I can go and do something with this knowledge.
Yeah, the saying is warts and all. This is humanity, warts and all. This is the stuff that nobody else is going to show you, because it's not fun. It's not fluff. It's not, you know, necessarily a cool thing to talk about, but it's real. You need to know that it's going on. We need to be empowered, because we want to actually change the world, don't we?
Yeah, we want to change the world. And we love every single person out there. We're coming up on a break here, but we appreciate you guys sticking in. We've got another part of the deep dive coming up in a shortly. See you after the break.
We have it all. Ultramethylene Blue, we have the best. The Shilajit, we have the best. The Turmeric, we have the best. We have the best spike protein, pro cardiovascular, ultimate life force. The best Irish sea moss gummies and capsules. Incredible. Research for yourself. We have the best at theultrastore.com. And if you buy any of them, they're 50% off when you sign up for AutoShip. Cancel anytime. And you guarantee it never sells out. They hold it back. You get 50% off on future orders. And anybody that downloads for free the Android or the Apple app, you find both links to it at alexjonesapp.com. It's free. You get an additional 20% off at checkout on top of that. Now, I had to convince Bitly to do this. They were a little skeptical, because they like to give you good deals, but not this good, because it's loss leader when you use the app. But because we have an 80%+ reorder rate on things like Ultramethylene Blue, it's actually working, because you get it, you love it, and you keep ordering. So these are great products. I want to induce you to try them. You know our information's hardcore. Try the products. It's just as hardcore. 1776 worldwide. We will crush the 1984 globalist system. God bless you all.